Chapter 5. Christos, the birth of the soul. Christos, the victory of the soul. Pupils of the school who have observed its development for many years will know that this course of development has been characterized by stages that showed many marked differences. These were not glaring contradictions, but logically related differences. It was the same with the exodus of the ancient Semitic people from Egypt to the Promised Land. It is the history of every Gnostic brotherhood that wishes to journey to a new reality. The first stage is that in which a beginning group becomes fully conscious of the great oppression under which it lives, its imprisonment, and begins to murmur or protest in a clear fashion. Seen psychologically, this is understandable, as in a situation like this, the awareness of a prehistoric fatherland arises ever more strongly from the subconscious, a place where it was totally different, better, yes, very good. That is why in such an initial stage, there is an inkling that, by and large, things could become better, and there is a distinct effort to improve and even make very good both one's personal circumstances and those of the group, as well as the external conditions of the state of captivity. Occult, humanitarian, and ethical inclinations then come to the fore. At that moment, one is still unaware of the fact that such a phase must come to an end, that it most certainly will meet its boundary, its limitations. God's kingdom cannot be realized on earth. A true structure in the sense of a world community of the soul cannot be founded in dialectical nature, for the emergency order of dialectics is kept in motion by opposites. The occult person is someone who ennobles himself, an I-central person par excellence, who recognizes his restrictions, his shortcomings, but who tries to overcome them by the cultivation of the self. The fact that this is impossible since, in fact, all efforts invoke their opposite, eludes the person of the first stage. White magic, therefore, has always been the creator of black magic. For once the self has reached a certain summit of development and is, in dialectics, confronted by the pairs of opposites, it must maintain itself and accept the struggle for existence. So what is white turns into what is black, with all the consequences. All these things are well known to you. If, after such a sorrowful experience, the idea of a lost fatherland is kept unwaveringly alive in the person of the first stage, he will enter the second stage, that of the escape, the phase of the exodus. In this stage, he dissociates himself totally and decisively from everything of the past and breaks all the old bonds. Then he enters into negation. He withdraws in the clear, living awareness that my kingdom is not of this world. But then comes the desert. For how can one find in this world the kingdom that does not belong to this world? How can one enter a different nature with a state of being that is completely derived from and developed through natural birth? That is why the second stage is that of the desert. One travels through the sands of the desert of the nature of opposites. But where can one go? Thus one follows crooked paths, for whether one travels north, south, east, or west, everything stays the same. Everywhere is the sand that slips through your fingers. What is the use of rising early or staying up late, as we read in the ancient book? One goes on eating the bread of sorrows. There is nothing new under the sun. Everything that is and everything that will be has already been in the preceding centuries. The ecclesiast was indeed a traveler in the desert, a man of the second stage. Yet the living awareness that everything is nothing, that it cannot be anything, the laborious passage through the desert, has a tremendous psychological effect. After many convulsions of fear and resistance, it brings resignation, a transition of the I into I-lessness and self-mortification. At first, this come down of the I as a result of the experience in the desert is grievous to behold. But that is only temporary, for the fall of the I is the nadir. The end of this stage means becoming all but identical to the desert sand, for in this condition, an openness for a new light emerges in the human system. It is a great wonder. In the nadir of his distress, man has found the gnosis or at least its radiative faculties. He who has found that light in the desert, who has seen that light, enters the third stage. He undertakes the journey to the Jordan, the journey to the living soul state. The light is the power bestowing on the traveler in the desert the strength for a new activity, to obtain the childship of God and find again the lost fatherland. That is why this stage is no longer characterized by the occult aspect of things, by an effort to attain the goal through the old self. But now it concerns a mystic experience of gratitude, certainty, and love. To be nothing oneself, to possess nothing and still to be overshadowed by the light makes man into a mystic, a grateful person who glorifies and praises the light. During this light experience, the school and the pupil approach the source of light, the river of God. This approach can only result in one thing, the birth of the new soul state, the realization of the principle of the childship of God. Now comes the fourth stage, the stage of the way of the cross with roses. When the group enters this stage, the aim is to bring home the new life principle, which has been born in what is a very strange and hostile nature, to safeguard and protect it against all dangers. In fact, the school and the pupil who journeyed with it across the river stand in a new land, in a true promised land. The beckoning, calling, and propelling light has truly stopped over the cave of birth, and in this cave something entirely new has awakened. Now, however, the group stands before the task of allowing what is new to grow and to transfigure rather than cultivate the environment of their native land of birth. That is why the promised land must be taken from enemies, and that, then, is the way of the cross with roses. That is following Jesus the Lord on his path from Bethlehem to Golgotha. The roses are the new life principles which have been set free through the rebirth of the soul and which have to be impelled to maturity. True Rosicrucianism, therefore, is emphatically Christ-centered. It demands absolute Gnostic transfiguration and is not a cult in any respect whatsoever. The older ones among us will remember the period and the moment when the school began to profess pure fundamental Rosicrucianism and thus began to purify the Philo. Sophical and practical aspects of the true promised land, he who has been ignited by the Spirit of God, must be prepared to die in Jesus, and in this way dare to be a true Rosicrucian. And then one also enters the fifth stage, which is called the rebirth out of the Holy Spirit. The fifth stage is the phase of the twice born. The first birth is celebrated in Christos, the birth of the soul. The second birth is that of the Christos, the victory of the soul over all opposition. It is the recreation of the promised land through transfiguration, the reunification of the perfect soul man with the Spirit, with the Father himself, with Pymander, the complete revivification of the New Jerusalem with its radiant temple of the Golden Head. He who can understand this fivefold path of the school and its candidates in the Gnostic mysteries will now, at the same time, discover something of the extraordinary significance of the coming period of time. For the sevenfold living body of the young Gnosis will correspond completely with the fivefold path we have been describing. In the new Gnostic realm, a path will then be explored that leads from Egypt to the New Jerusalem, or, in other words, from the dialectical house of bondage to the liberating life of the living soul state. As long as it is at all possible, the school of the young Gnosis will, in our time, keep this long and so complex path open for all who wish to follow it. And now that this great and glorious work has been accomplished, a time of peace, harmony, and the profound tranquility of the great soul community has arrived for us. In the preceding years of building, it was always necessary to shift accents and emphasize the many different aspects of the work and of pupilship. Here, the danger was always present that many would be absorbed by one of these aspects to such an extent that their personal progress would stagnate. But now that the building is finished, all aspects in the school and in the life of pupilship can and will be brought into equilibrium as a blessing for everyone. You will soon perceive and experience the activities of the new period. Lost as to the self in the desert sands, I have been chosen, in my state of non-being, The light has found me in this comfortless place and calls me out of its aridity to the river of God.